morning. Welcome to Backchat. I'm Hugh Tewett, and your co-host today is Ada Wong. Ada, good morning to you.
Good morning, Hugh.
Our main topic today, should we pay more tax? Our Gini coefficient, a measure of income inequality, is at its highest level for 45 years. And the academic who's tipped to be welfare minister, Lau Chee Kwong, has warned that the problem would get worse because the population was ageing rapidly. And the next administration, he said, must figure out how to tackle elderly poverty. So would higher income tax and capital gains tax, a couple of ideas floated by him, make things better or worse? How accurate do you think the measure is anyway? And how much is down to demographic changes? Email us with your thoughts, your take. Our address is backchat@rthk.hk. You can go to our Facebook page, that's Backchat and RTHK Radio 3, and comment there, or call us on 233 88266. After 9:20, we're talking about hoarding in Hong Kong. With us in our central studio is David Webb, shareholder activist and founder of website.com. Mopak Hung, we hope, will be joining us soon from the Baptist University. And joining us on the line is Fernando Chung, legislator with the Labour Party. Let's start with him. Mr. Chung, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks very much indeed for joining us. What do you make of this this news that the Gini coefficient is at a highest level for 45 years in Hong Kong?
Well, certainly it's bad news. We all along know that Hong Kong's income disparity has topped the world, according to a UN report earlier, a couple of years earlier. And the situation definitely hasn't improved. Although there is a slight improvement after policy intervention, that is after taxation and welfare transfer, we really haven't seen any major changes in the past 20 years. Which means that the current economic development regime, the current approaches we're taking by the government in allowing tycoons and big corporations to profit in a huge portion, while salaries and minimum wages continue to stay very low. So we have very little public intervention. And the government maintains that its recurrent expenditure should stay way below 20% of the GDP. And I think this is the destiny of the current approach that we're taking, that by way of capitalism and market distribution, we have seen the worst disparity in the world.
Fernando, would you also agree that this is also attributed to the increase in the number of smaller households? For example, there are now 57,000 one-member households.
Yeah, definitely. Smaller households make less income. And as the population ages, we will be seeing more single elderly living alone or two elderly couple living by themselves, and that certainly would exacerbate the problem. And what's more, when it comes to medical care and other long-term care, our system is really deteriorating, because if you look at the waiting time for residential care, for example, for the elderly, it's getting longer. Waiting time for community care is also getting longer. And so as the population continues to age, and we're seeing a much more rapid aging process in the next 20 years. So I can imagine the disparity and the poverty rate could only get worse in the future.
What about handouts such as the old age living allowance and low-income working family allowances? Are those handouts helping at all?
I think they are. They are helping to some extent to slow the pauperization or to slow the growth of income disparity a bit. But it is not enough. And we need to really take much more robust actions to look at how we can sustain an aging population where we would be needing a lot more long-term care, health care. And while we do not see a worsening of income disparity in the future.
The obvious thing to do, which is what they do in most countries, is to take some money off rich people and give it to poor people. And you can do that, and what they do all over the world is with a higher rate of income tax and with some kind of capital gains tax. We don't really do that in Hong Kong. Do you think we should?
I think so. Well, this is a simple arithmetic. You have people who are making a lot, but they are really a very small number. And as many theorists and also economists have pointed out, that the economic growth always proceeds slower than by way of making salaries. It's not able to catch up with the economic growth and capital return of those who have the capital to make investment. And so you have to tax the rich and give it to the poor. And also the government has to increase its intervention. In most other countries, for example, in the UK, their government recurrent expenditure is about 40% of the GDP. While we only we have less than half of that, and their intervention or investment into the economy is through providing human services, public services such as healthcare, education, social welfare, and housing. Now, I have to remind our audience that this is not purely welfare. We're looking at investing in job opportunities, careers in these human services. Therefore, you would be looking at a larger number of nurses, doctors, teachers, social workers, people who devote themselves into human services. And so, in the end, they produce better services and therefore better quality of life for the people. We generate more job opportunities, and these people are professionals, and they also become middle class, and there you build a much larger middle class population in our society by way of investing into these human services.
Okay, David Webb, good morning to you.
Morning.
Thanks for joining us. The government has, you know, tried to spin this news on the Gini coefficient by pointing to the figures after government intervention, or after welfare spending and so on. But it's still very high. And as Fernando Chung was saying, this, it's still high in international terms. What's going wrong in Hong Kong? Why are we so much worse off than other places?
Well, we're not. And I think it's not spin, it's statistics. This is a non-partisan department of the government, the Census and Statistics Department, which does these surveys. It's a very long paper if you want to read the whole thing with all the statistical analysis at the back. What they've concluded is that by nearly every measure, the Gini coefficient has actually reduced in the last 5 years. It's reduced on the basis of after salaries, taxes and social benefits on a per household basis, it's come down from 0.475 to 0.473. And on a per person basis, it's come down from 0.431 to 0.42. And that's even after allowing for the fact that there are more retired people in Hong Kong than there were 5 years ago. The proportion of households with nobody working in them, what's called economically inactive households, has gone up from 17.9% to 19.0%, which, of course, when people retire, they may well have good savings by then, but they will have very little income. A person with living in a self-owned $4 million flat with $4 million of cash in the bank is technically a US dollar millionaire, but his interest income will be about $1,667 a month if he's earning 0.5%. So by that definition, he's below the poverty line. So how can a US dollar millionaire be below the poverty line? It's because we're only focusing here on income and not on wealth. And
I don't know what's Lee Ka-shing's income. It may be that there's quite a lot of very rich people also who don't have an income in the sense that...
Yeah, so the point is that you mustn't confuse income with...
Have an income.
You mustn't confuse income with wealth. The person who just puts their money into gold bars has zero income. And also, Fernando Chung...
Income. You're right.
If I can come back to a number of points Fernando Chung made on which he was wrong. First of all, public expenditure is not way below 20% of GDP. It is now about 22% of GDP, which is up substantially. substantially since before the handover. It was about 18% of GDP. So we've the amount that the government is spending on our behalf has increased substantially. Welfare expenditure in the last 5 years is up 71%. We're now spending $73 billion this financial year on welfare. And that amounts to 19% of all of our public expenditure recurrent. Education, social, welfare, health and housing amount to $229 billion this year. That's about 58.6% of all of our public expenditure. And that's about $30,000 per person in Hong Kong. And in terms of the income groups in Hong Kong, the bottom 10%, their income from employment has gone up in the last 5 years in nominal terms by 46.6% compared with an increase of only 23.6% for the top 10%. So the bottom 10% income has grown faster than the top 10%, and that income gap is narrowing. Now, why is that? A number of things have been mentioned. The higher minimum wage, the work incentive transport subsidy, the low income working families allowance, these all cost real dollars out of taxpayers' money. And they are causing a reduction in the Gini coefficient. And when we compare the Gini coefficient between a comparable city like rather than countries, between Hong Kong and Singapore, you can see on that data we're basically the same. The figure in Singapore is now 0.402, and ours is very similar to that. So the it's simply not the case that the income gap is widening. It has been narrowing. One can debate, and we should, whether we are spending money wisely on welfare and whether we could do more for those who really need it and less for those who don't. I mean, I don't see why rich people, when they're 70, should get fruit money, a $1,300 a month handout, for just being 70 and having survived some of their peers who were unfortunate enough to die earlier. I don't see why people over 65 who are rich should be subsidized by the taxpayer for their transport at $2 a ride when the government has to pay the difference on, say, a $40 fare to Discovery Bay where there's no public housing at all.
Okay,
so we can focus our money better and achieve more bang for the same buck or bigger bangs for more bucks if we do it properly. So, and there's certainly no need to be talking about raising taxes because the government has been running a structural surplus and has accumulated over 1 trillion Hong Kong dollars since the handover in its reserves, including the surpluses in the exchange fund. And recently they've been running at around $100 billion a year of surplus. So, in fact, what we need to be doing is stimulating the economy by reducing the rates of salaries tax and profits taxes and returning some of those accumulated reserves into the economy rather than draining them out every year.
We're also joined by Mo Pak Hung, Associate Professor in the Department of Economics at the Baptist University. Professor Mo, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning.
Hi, thank you very much indeed for joining us again. We have, on the one hand, David Webb saying that the income gap is not widening. Is that what you're saying, David?
It's narrowing, as I said.
Narrowing.
The bottom 10% have grown 46% in the last 5 years.
Fernando Chung saying that the gap is widening. Who's right?
I think the income gap is and will widening, as well as the wealth gap is and will widening. One reason is that some rich group in mainland China, they are growing much faster than us, and they come here to buy the assets, and therefore the wealth gap, the real estate price will go up, and also the inflation rate, other things equal, will also rise. And as a result, the savings of the poor will be cut by the inflation. Purchasing power will be lower.
But inflation, inflation's not that high in Hong Kong.
What I mean is, inflation can be driven by two factors. One is aggregate demand, and one is aggregate supply. The aggregate demand is still recovering globally, and so therefore you can see the inflation rate is very severe. However, and as well as the aggregate supply also decreased. So when the global economy recovers, the inflation rate, and given the Hong Kong situation, will be higher than the global level, global average. So still, our wage rate compared with the inflation rate will grow less than the inflation rate. I mean, other things being equal. And in such case, the poor and the savers will be in a disadvantaged position. And that will widening our purchasing power gap between the rich and poor.
Sorry, you're saying that's not happening at the moment, but it will happen?
Still happening already.
It's beginning to happen.
And particularly in the purchasing power sense.
Okay, so what David is saying that the bottom 46% of the people, you know,
bottom
10%. Their income has increased. But Professor Mo, you are saying that because there are now more rich people in Hong Kong, so the gap is still there.
Yeah, the gap is going up. It's going up already.
Having more rich people doesn't make poor people poorer.
Yeah, and that
this
is the case.
Fundamental.
So therefore, and that is, you have a very good point. If the inflation or the gap is due to the more economic opportunities in the whole society, then that will be fine. However, the problem is that is not the case in the situation of Hong Kong. And however, if you say raising the tax and become more progressive, it is totally in the wrong direction. Because in the whole world, we try to raise the competitive power of each nation, try to raise the competitive power. However, and all of them is cutting tax and cutting welfare and reforming their welfare. We should not move in the wrong direction. We should have a comprehensive structural reform so as to promote more economic opportunity to the poor, to the lower income group, to provide more cheap human capital and then subsidize the human capital formation of the next generation so as to make them have a better chance to move up the social ladder, so as to make the growth of Hong Kong, opportunity of Hong Kong become better and better. In such case, more income inequality is not a problem. However, we should not discourage productive activities. We should encourage productive activities. We should discourage rent-seeking activities. We should encourage innovative activities. So raising tax is totally a wrong direction, particularly to the income tax and profit tax.
What about introducing capital gains and other things?
Capital gain tax, we can investigate to see, because Hong Kong is a financial center. If we raise the capital gain tax, then we have to identify which capital should be taxed. Because otherwise, it will damage our position as a financial center. This is one of the key pillars for the prosperity of Hong Kong.
Fernando, you want to come back?
Yes. Well, I think every paper, all the press have pointed to the fact that the Gini coefficient has risen to a record high. And as you said,
They love a headline, Fernando, but it's only true if you ignore the benefits that we give to people, and that's just fantasy land.
I think you can't turn a blind eye.
Well, then let's stop giving people benefits, because if they're not being counted, and you prefer to look at the pre-benefit figure and the pre-tax figure as well when you take away money from high-earning people, then let's not do it.
And there's no argument that it is only going to get worse with the aging of our population.
But let's be clear, no amount of tax is going to change the Gini coefficient before tax, because it's measured before tax. If you tax people at 100%, you'll still have the same Gini coefficient if you're not going to count the tax.
Points to the fact that the first round of distribution through salaries is failing, and also through retirement protection is failing. Now, if we have a good retirement protection which raises the income of our elderly population above poverty, then, you know, you would be looking at a much narrower income disparity. If we have salaries for the basic, a very low income strata, increased...
And we have increased the benefits to elderly people.
Fair. Well, yeah, of course we do.
The old age living allowance is less tested.
The problem is we don't have sufficient support for that. Everything is there, but it is not strong enough. It is insufficient. People have to queue up for it. And also, you have to look at the deterioration of other aspects in life. Professor Mock point to housing, and also if you look at health care, long-term care for our aging population, it will be getting worse. And adding that to the fact that the income distribution is already fairly very unfair, you would be looking at a lot of grievances and uproar. And I think we are looking at crisis in Hong Kong.
There's no crisis, Fernando. Hong Kong is still a very desirable place for people to live. If it wasn't the case, then they'd all be migrating to the mainland.
There's
a free public housing for people who need it. There's very subsidized public housing for those who can afford a $1,000 a month public rent. There is free healthcare, free education.
In line for it.
And there are people waiting in line on a prioritized basis for public housing, yes.
But how many people are living in subdivided units?
Not that many compared to the number who are living in public rental housing. I mean, there's always going to be issues with the structure of that system. I've advocated shifting towards a public rental voucher, in other words, allowing people much more flexibility over where they live with public money. Rather than having the government involved in bricks and mortar and
why
putting people in ghettos of
David,
public housing, because that just...
Why are we looking at about a 40% poverty rate in the elderly population?
Because you're measuring income and not assets, for one thing.
You
define poverty in a way that ensures there will always be people in poverty.
If you measure wealth, you're looking at a much larger...
Yes, but we're talking about well-being, not wealth. I mean, we shouldn't get envious of people who have been fortunate enough or successful enough to build some wealth. What we're concerned about is the welfare of poor people and overall livelihoods here. Okay, I think we can agree it's not the government's job to make poor people rich. It's government's job to make sure that they have adequate healthcare, education, housing, the basic needs of a society to ensure a harmonious place with low crime rates under the rule of law. You know, and we do that. And the elderly have had more and more benefits in the last 5 years. There's a question over, in my mind, over whether we are giving enough money to people who actually need it.
No.
Because we're giving people too much when they don't. Okay.
It's not just money. It's not just.
Are you over 65 yet, Fernando? Because if you are, then I'm subsidizing your transport.
Sorry, David. Just got a message saying tell Webb to stop talking over other contributors just because he doesn't agree with their point of view. Fernando, you were saying.
Well, I'm saying that if you look at the quality of life of many vulnerable groups, elderly people, disabled people, poor households, they're living in substandard conditions. Look at the housing environment. Look at health care. People wait for an appointment for a year and a half. Look at residential care for the elderly and the disabled. My daughter, who is severely disabled, if I had applied for residential care for her, the wait for her is now 17 years. Can you imagine that? And look at how many elderly people die while waiting for residential care in the last year. Over 6,000. Just look all around you. Come down to the street.
No, I agree.
And look at how
shift resources
are making ends meet.
Yeah, this is what my point is. So I'm totally open to debating how much we spend, how long the waiting lists are, whether it's to get your eyes fixed or your hips replaced, or to get residential care. This is where the money should be spent, not on subsidizing rich people's transport costs just because they've reached 65, which is now costing us $1.2 billion per year. The government did it as a populist move, but it's not the right move. I mean, wouldn't you rather that money was spent on shortening the waiting lists?
We're looking at the deterioration of our health care.
And if there is a need to raise a little bit more revenue, why is it, for example, that the legislators, including the PAN Democrats, have refused to support raising the rates on parking meters or parking fines? We're charging $8 an hour on the most expensive parking meters in Hong Kong, when a nearby car park, which is less convenient to get into,
will
cost $24 an hour.
I think we could raise that by two times. And we should tax the rich, definitely. And why are we subsidizing
people? We do. We do tax.
Buy a Tesla. You know, it doesn't make sense to me. And we're building, developing Dongchong.
Well, as you know, there were environmental reasons for encouraging electric cars, and they've now cut the tax break.
But we're
on
building
that.
A yacht club for the rich in the Dongchong redevelopment area.
And a lot of public housing as well.
Yeah, well,
but as I say,
private housing.
It would. So the question about whether a flat is a public unit or a private unit would be determined by rental vouchers if you adopt my voucherization proposal. And you then have much more flexibility, and the government doesn't have to decide in advance whether a piece of land should be public or private.
All right, well, we're going to have to take a break now and come back in a few minutes after the news at 9 o'clock. I think saying goodbye for the moment to Fernando Chung, legislator with the Labour Party. Mr. Chung, thanks very much indeed for joining us today. If you've got want to weigh in, drop us a line, bankchat@rthk.hk. There's a lot of weather around. The red rainstorm warning is now in effect. The warning signal for the rain is a red rainstorm. The strong signal number 3 is also in effect, as well as a thunderstorm warning and a landslip warning as well. Forecast for today, cloudy with heavy squally showers and a few thunderstorms, strong southwesterly winds, occasionally gale force offshore and on high ground. The maximum temperature today about 29 degrees. The winds will moderate gradually and showers will ease off later. And the outlook, showers still around in the next couple of days. Once again, the strong wind signal number 3 in effect, and a red rainstorm warning has been hoisted. Welcome back. This is Backchat on a Tuesday morning with Ada Wong and me, Hugh Chiverton. We're continuing to talk about income inequality and tax. This is after Lo Chi Kwong, the academic Democratic Party member. I don't know if she's still in the Democratic Party member, who may become the next Director of Social Welfare. Floated the idea. He now sort of backtracked a little bit, says that it's something that Hong Kong could discuss. The idea of capital gains tax and increasing the basic rate or the top rate of income tax from 15 to 17% as a way to overcome income inequality, which the latest survey by the Census and Statistics Department has shown to be measured by the Gini, so-called Gini coefficient, at its highest for 45 years. Thrashing this out, we have with us in our Central Studio, David Webb, shareholder activist, founder of website.com. Mopak Hong, associate professor in the Department of Economics at the Baptist University. And we're also joined now by Cherky Lee, who's chair professor of social policy with the Department of Asian and Policy Studies at the Education University. Our email address is backchat@rthk.hk. We'd very much like to hear from you. Later, we're going to be talking about the issue of hoarding in Hong Kong. Reporting large numbers of people in Hong Kong are hoarding. I think everybody in Hong Kong pretty much hoards. We'll be talking about that. If you've got any thoughts on that, we'd love to hear from you. Drop us a line, bankchat@rthk.hk. We've got some emails to get to in just a moment. Thank you very much indeed for those. But Professor Cho, Cherky Lee, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us. What about the idea of, say, a capital gains tax, a higher rate of income tax as a way to overcome income inequality? I mean, these are standard tools, aren't they? These are found in most places in the world, certainly higher tax and capital gains tax in one form or another. And most places in the world, measured by the Gini coefficient, have lower income inequality than us. Would we be in a better position if we had them?
Yeah, I agree that we should try to find out more resources or to support those who are in need. And I think because there are two factors contribute to the increase of Gini coefficient. One is the elderly population is increasing, and second is that the household with one or two members are also in increasing trend. So I think this kind of demographic change will continue in the coming decade. So we have to find out something to support those people who are old or living by themselves or just a couple.
What about just giving them more money from the money that the government already has? The government's got lots in reserves. Can't we just be a bit more generous?
Yeah, well, that's the one thing they have to convince the business sector that why they should not use the money they have. I think they may have a difficulty to explain it. or at least they should use it part of it before they could raise this measure.
Yeah, what about other government interventions, Professor Cho? For example, rent control, I think the
most important thing in Hong Kong is the social mobility. And there's no magic trick to do that. I think the most important tools or measure is to invest more on education and as well as the housing, public housing, especially public housing. There's no, and of course we can also put more effort or give more money to those children who are living in poverty, so that they could have an equal chance to be success.
Okay, some comments from listeners. This is from Jason, who says the Capital Works Reserve Fund is a hypothecated fund, whereby all the money raised from land sales is reserved for capital works, i.e. infrastructure, and cannot be used on recurring costs such as education, healthcare, or pensions. The Capital Works Reserve Fund was a colonial idea from the 1970s, made little sense when we needed infrastructure, but now our infrastructure is built and the fund is now building ever more white elephants like high-speed rail and the tofu bridge to nowhere. An ageing society doesn't need to spend so much on infrastructure. Time to scrap the fund and free up this vast amount of cash, about $80 billion a year, for things we actually need. That thought comes from Jason.
Yes.
Mo Pak Hong, what do you make of that? Do you agree or...?
I think somehow the land fund, is it the capital fund?
Yeah.
Can be used from a long-term investment. Currently, it's only on infrastructure. But nowadays, a long-term investment, not only infrastructure, but also how to provide an environment, create an environment for innovative activities, how to support research and development, so as to develop some leading edge technology to raise the competitiveness of the economy. That is also long-term investment. I think besides infrastructure, we have to think about how to use the money. Apparently, there's a lot of surplus in the account, and how to use it for the long-term development besides the infrastructure. And that will promote the mobility of the youngsters and the future competitiveness of Hong Kong. I think we should also think about this.
Yeah, the Capital Works Reserve Fund should be scrapped. We don't need to allocate money and say, "Oh, we got a budget now to spend on concrete, and we must spend it on concrete." It has to be part of our overall approach to budgetary, the budgetary approach, and education, of course, gives people the best start in life if we do it properly. There's a question mark over whether we're doing it properly, but we certainly provide very subsidised education all the way up to university level.
David Webb, aren't you being willfully blind, actually, to the way the government works? And as Cho Kee Lee was saying, it's the business sector who is against spending more money.
No, not at all.
Spending more money on social welfare.
The government sector.
And it's the business sector who benefit from this massive spending on infrastructure, on the pouring concrete and everything like that.
Some of them do.
And that's the way the government works. And you know that's how the government works. And that's why we have such an unequal society.
Well, certainly I'm not a fan of functional constituencies and the way they have excessive influence over government policy in all areas, including things like transport and the taxi cartel and the minibus cartel and so on. The sooner we scrap the functional constituencies and their subsectors that elect the chief executive, the better. Let's not lose sight of one thing. The Gini coefficient can also be seen as a measure of incentive. If you reduce Gini to zero, meaning that each person has equal income, you remove and is not allowed to go beyond that, you completely eliminate incentive. And so at some point between the current 0.40 for distribution of employment income in Hong Kong and at 0.40 and zero, you lose that incentive effect. People say it's just not worth trying that hard if all I'm going to ever earn in life is 10% more than the person who's not trying at all. So you've got to preserve the incentive in the system to help everybody get a start in life with equal opportunity to education. I see a lot of success stories, people who started in slums or in very poor quality public housing and have become leading barristers in Hong Kong, legislators, scientists, and business people, and they can tell you, you know, these are not second generation stories; these are first generation stories. So
David, there is an opportunity
for people to better themselves.
This is 20 years ago. 20 years ago, you do have these really great success stories, very touching stories. But now, you know, the best schools are the direct subsidy schools, and you know they are up for $80,000 tuition fees,
and they're subsidized by the
well,
government.
The Newtown schools are not that good. So the Newtown kids, you know, the kids living in Tin Shui Wai, I think 90% of them would not have any opportunity to get into university.
When you look at that, I don't think that's true. When you look at how Hong Kong scores on mathematics tests at secondary schools, for example, there are studies that look at it across countries, and Hong Kong are some of the most able kids compared
best
to America,
the best schools.
Compared to the UK. You know, our kids do extremely well, and you know, in other aspects like healthcare, you can say that there are problems with some of our waiting lists, but the life expectancies in Hong Kong are some of the longest in the world. So we must be doing something right at both ends of our livelihoods, life from childhood and in old age. But clearly, squandering money on things like the Zhuhai-Macau-Hong Kong road bridge is a very fast way to bleed away the reserves, and there are better ways to do it, including cutting tax rates and increasing the incentive to people to go out and better themselves as much as possible.
Okay, just a reminder on the weather, that the strong wind signal number 3 is hoisted. The red rainstorm warning is also in effect now. There's a thunderstorm warning and a landslip warning as well. Okay, some emails. Thank you very much indeed. First of all, one from Mr. Tang, who says, people always speak of the wealth gap, but a more pressing issue that surprisingly attracts very little attention is the shrinking middle class. They are the ones who have to set aside a large portion of their income for paying tax. The bourgeoisie are often left behind when the government rolls out relief measures or hand out sweeteners. In the face of a graying population, the middle class plays a pivotal role in giving a boost to the working population by having children, as families of this socio-economic status should be able to provide an environment for children to grow into well-educated citizens who can contribute to the knowledge-based economy in Hong Kong. Sadly, owing to heavy income tax and expensive mortgages, the middle class will have little incentive to ponder having kids. This poignant phenomenon will persist unless the government has a determination to reward the middle class by giving them tax rebates on a consistent basis. The middle class simply think that society is punishing them for being hardworking and well-educated. Why would they add another burden to themselves by rearing children? That message comes from Mr. Tang. Thank you very much indeed for that. Let's see. This is Money, who says it would be more efficient to turn go-downs into old people's homes with nursing on each floor. The government needs to stop subsidizing and buy outright, for example, buy school books and free activities. No expense to parents on schooling. The government needs to interfere with rents on supermarkets and restaurants and foods. That comes from Joe Average. And Pete says, as usual, David Webb moans about the $2 fare for over 65s. This is the only benefit I get in my old age after decades of paying tax. If I didn't have this concession, I would only pay around $20 on the DB ferry, not $40, and $5 on the bus to DB. The alternative to the $2 concession is to pay half fare, which happens if you don't have an Octopus card. By the way, you do not even need to be a resident of Hong Kong to get a senior Octopus card, so tourists can take advantage of this scheme. That comes from Pete. Choki Lee, just go back to you for a moment. What about that point about the middle class? Do you think that the middle class are missing out, that if we do take money from high-income earners and even through capital gains tax and give it to the poor, there will be people in the middle who are being punished?
I think it's absolutely correct that the shrinking of the middle class due to the, you know, the restructuring of the industry in Hong Kong. There's not much manufacture, and I think that government is doing something, but they're doing too late, especially to encourage the technology or other culture or creative business, and they should do more and encourage more, and then put more money on the investment or the education so that we have more talent in those areas, so that we could create a middle class. Otherwise, just like other aging society, and the middle class will shrink or even disappear.
I think that's not. There's no danger of that happening, and there is a middle class, and they're alive and well, and they have the opportunity to over their lives. Better themselves and raise their incomes. If you start out as a trainee lawyer, for example, you'll eventually hope to make partner or maybe even managing partner of your own firm, set up your own firm and do very well. And those opportunities are alive and well. I don't favour handing out cash to them in some way. I mean, we've had some pretty wacky ways of returning surpluses over the years, like just dishing out money into electricity accounts or just dishing out money. $6,000 each happened on one occasion. That cost us about $30 billion of reserves. Wasn't the best way of spending public money, but you know, I don't think there's any danger of middle class disappearing in Hong Kong. They're alive.
Well, you can ask the young people to say that whether they can achieve the salary they get like their parents in their own age. I think it's very difficult for them. They don't have the job security. And they don't have the prospect of their job, you know. They don't know when they can be promoted, and that's why they will be a very relaxing attitude that they can quit their job anytime, and then they go to travel for a long, long time, and then come back, and they get the same job with the same salary.
If you quit your job and travel,
that's why they don't have a prospect, and then they don't.
Why should you expect to come back to a better job?
You do not work hard enough, but the truth is that even they work hard, there's no prospect for them. Even though for some profession like social work, you know, the job security is not there.
Well, unfortunately, as we narrow the income,
they only have a job to job, a contract, a 3-year contract, 2-year contract, never have a permanent post.
One of the problems with narrowing the income gap is the reduced amount of work for social workers. But isn't that a good thing to have, a good problem to have if we're making...
I just make an example.
Reducing the number of caseloads.
It's true to other professionals, you know. Not saying that people are already saying that the technology will replace most of job in accountant or lawyer, something like that. So if the government are not preparing for that, there will be a huge
I do hope we're all
of the labor capital in the future.
There is a big technology revolution underway. And that will change societies around the world. We hopefully have automated transport before 20 years from now, where you'll get into an automated taxi and it'll take you where you want to go based on where you've programmed it to go. And trucks will be automated and so on. So there will be quite a lot of low-skilled jobs that will disappear, and societies are going to have to deal with that, probably with larger welfare payments.
That's why I say the middle class will disappear, because most of people in the middle class with the skilled job, right?
Well, middle-class skilled jobs will be the last ones to disappear.
I hope so, but I'm not so optimistic.
If you have robots conducting brain surgery, we probably don't need brains anymore.
Well, I was told that those jobs that require a lot of creativity and critical thinking will not be lost.
Yeah, but, sure. But that's why we have to put a lot of money.
That is not the strength of our education.
To change those skills. We call it non-cognitive skill.
Yeah, but what we don't want is to tilt the playing field. Hong Kong's always worked off the principle of a level playing field, and it's getting more level as we have things like the Competition Commission coming in to try and stop cartels and bid rigging and so on, price fixing. But why should we, for example, put billions of dollars into a movie fund to make movies that people aren't willing to pay to see because that their makers are saying, we won't make this unless you pay us to make them because we can't get a profit from ticket sales and disc revenues and so on.
Because there are no movie cinemas anymore, David.
Well, you don't have to have cinemas if people don't want them. If they'd rather watch movies online on their devices at home through streaming video, then that's the future.
Surely that the playing field is not level and the government has to do what it can to make it level. It's not the question of the government making a level playing field.
Not by throwing money
around.
It
has to even things out.
Sure.
Okay, but it has to even things out. That's why you have progressive tax. That's why you have all kinds of things even.
That makes things skewed. But
the idea is to even out these things.
But
now, if you have a basic underlying problem, as you do in Hong Kong, it seems, that with the raw data from the Gini coefficient, you do have a big you do have a lot of inequality by international standards.
Is there
the
a
government
point
has to work harder to make things level?
The question so the we can debate is how much incentive you want to remove. Because if you tax people at, say, the highest rate in the US, which I think is around 40%, and then distribute that money to poor people, how much incentive have you removed?
It's not a question of incentive. As you say, it's a level playing field. It's just giving people an equal...
I'm talking about economic level.
Yes.
So the government needs to do more to remove barriers. For example, no one should be prevented from driving their car for a living and taking passengers if they want to. Okay, they should just be able to apply for a permit at a nominal cost of $100 or for paperwork and get licensed and go out there and do it. But the government is stopping them because they're protecting vested interests in taxi licenses, and this is just ridiculous.
No, because the government... I mean,
$120 billion worth of taxi licenses are
The government has to look at the big picture, and it has to look at the road usage.
Yes, and that's why they need...
transport policy. People are always saying, be holistic. Have to look at the distribution of transport around Hong Kong, issue licenses willy-nilly.
That's their attitude, and it's absolutely no excuse.
Then we should control the number of cars.
Yeah, we should control congestion, Ada. We should, when it's busy on the central roads, we need to charge people for using those roads. We haven't got enough roads for everyone to use them at the same time. So you have to ration them by charging. And we do that with tunnels. We already charge people to use the tunnels and certain bridges as well. So there's no reason in principle why we can't do that with congested areas at peak times. Okay. But then you can say, let's not discriminate against people who want to drive their vehicle and carry passengers versus those who want to drive their vehicle.
Okay, well, that's another discussion for another day. For the moment, thank you very much indeed to David Webb. One more comment from Colin, who says we're also subsidising rich over 65 and tourists visiting Hong Kong with a $2 senior discount travel scheme. Thanks for that comment. And thank you to our guests today, to Mo Pak Hung from the Baptist University, Choky Lee from the Education University, Chair Professor of Social Policy, also speaking earlier, to Fernando Cheung from the Labour Party, and to David Webb. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today.